Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about keeping our pets happy, motivated, and warm now that winter is here. And to help us out, George Malera with us. He's a professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. He also volunteers his time and skill with not-for-profit organizations and rescue groups. And always fun to have him with us. What type of winter clothing is your pet wearing this time of year? Do they love it or do they hate it? Join in the conversation. You can give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or we can send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. George Malera, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Larry, thanks so much for having me back. Good to hear your voice again.
I'll tell you what, we were just listening to the news there, and they were talking about wind chills of 35 below, and you think about a Wisconsin winter, and it's all right, there's snow, there's ice, there's salt on the streets and the everywhere else. So how can people protect their dog's paws?
It is very much, like, for all my Star Wars fans, it's very much like Hoth out there, right? It's just super ice cold. It is not, it's not pretty to take your dog out. And the smaller the dog gets, the more intimidating the outdoors can get and painful. So there's two sides to this discussion where we talk about the clothing that we can put on our dogs, as well as not taking your dogs out at all. There are some, I have a little Chihuahua Terrier mix from Alabama, and she has not forgotten about Alabama because she absolutely loathes the cold. So we have a couple things set up to sort of help her along and help her feel comfortable. The first thing I'm going to talk about in terms of clothing for dogs is boots. Boots are very, very essential, but not all dogs like to wear them. So I do recommend people use a desensitization protocol where you start with one little booty on one little foot, and you put it on, and you give them a bunch of treats, and then you take the boot off, and then you stop giving treats. Then you put the boot back on, and you give some more treats, and then you take it off. The idea here is that the more you have the boot on, the dog's going to say, hey, put that back on. I like these boots on. As opposed to saying, oh, this is foreign, I don't like it, I'm going to bite my boot, I'm not going to enjoy putting it on. The premise of helping a dog feel good about something that might cause discomfort is obviously best started when they're young. But, you know, some people just start wearing, they don't start putting boots on their dogs until they're a little bit older, and the dogs want to protest against wearing their boots.
Yeah. Or, you know, you might have a dog that came from the South, for example. I have a friend whose dog came from Texas, older dog, certainly never wore boots there.
Right, exactly right.
And so you've got to train an older dog to do that.
Exactly right. So, and all this handling stuff that I'm talking about with putting the boots on, it also is beneficial to do with rescue dogs or any dog in general, just to help them learn to be handled and be touched in the world of husbandry, right? Trimming nails, brushing teeth, cleaning ears, and wiping eyes. You know, these are all things that we have to do to our dogs. Even something as simple as toweling them off from being all muddy and gross and wet from coming in from outside. Now, when it comes to coats, they make a variety of coats. When I do have my little dog outside, I do start with a base layer, almost like Long John's, which is and nowadays, they make so many wonderful products for dogs. But the base layer is really important. It sort of insulates them, and then you can put a bulkier coat on top of that. And they come in many, many varieties and different styles of jackets. And finding the right one that's best for you and your dog is going to be essential. Some dogs are very sporty and run really fast and hard. And, you know, the Velcro works really great. Some jackets have buckles and clips. I find that the buckles and clips can be a little bit cumbersome at times, and that's why I like the Velcro for my dogs.
Yeah, I think Velcro is nice. And, you know, the ones that you can purchase are, it's easy for Lila, at least, the dog that I'm most familiar with, to be able to go outside. And you don't have to do any, she can poop and pee and doesn't have to take the coat off.
Exactly. And it makes it really accessible, for the human and comfortable for the pup. A couple of other tips that I wanted to recommend, especially for this brutally cold weather, and this is, you know, hindsight's 2020, but I always like to give this advice maybe for next season, or maybe we'll have a thaw and then it'll snow again, is to put down a tarp. Put down a tarp before it snows, and you stake it down with like some camping stakes. And then when it does snow, you can pull back the tarp and you'll have a patch of grass for your dogs to go on. Like you said, you know, some dogs that come from Texas or down south, they've never seen snow, and peeing and pooping on the snow can be really, really foreign to them. So having this patch of grass under the tarp is a godsend, because you can show them something familiar where they can go to the bathroom.
Ah, that makes good sense. Well, let's take a call. Jim in Stevens Point, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I have a Cairn Terrier. She's about 7 years old. I rescued her at about a year and a half. And I had another dog, a big golden doodle, who passed away about a year ago. And ever since he passed away, she seems really bored in the house. She gave up on chewing toys, chewing anything. And basically what she likes to do is go outside and look for birdseed. So I'm looking for some way to get her interested in chewing on things, having toys in the house, because she just seems bored.
Yeah.
Oh, so sorry for your loss. You know, we forget about the mourning period that happens to our dogs when they're after they lose their brother, sister, friend. You know, it can be hard for them to recover from that as well. So that can be tough for her. So one of the things that I recommend, like just to get her sort of into stuff, is to play a little bit of keep away. So purchasing like a bully stick, and this is also imagining that she doesn't have any dietary issues, but purchasing like a bully stick, or they make this one product called No Hide, which is like a fake rawhide made out of rice. All these different types of chewies. Well, you pull one out and you let her chew on it a little bit, and then you take it away. You sort of play keep away with her, which will entice her to want it even more. And if she's a tenacious little terrier, like I imagine most Karens are, playing that keep away game is a lot of fun. Also playing tug of war with her. A lot of Karens really enjoy playing tug of war, and you can use tug of war to entice them to go looking for things. Remembering too that she's a ratter. So for her, being in the dirt is very important. Right, that's where the name terrier comes from, terra meaning earth. So one thing I like to do to keep her engaged with a project, so to speak, is you can even take some of her kibble and scatter it in the snow and let her go around in the snow and hunt for her kibble like a little truffle pig. It'll give her the incentive to go looking for stuff, and it can be very enriching and fun. And my other favorite toy for dogs in terms of engagement is a stuffed Kong. And what I'll do is I'll stuff it in front of them, and I'll put a little bit of hot dog, a little bit of roast beef, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of peanut butter, and then I take it and I'll freeze it. And because of all the enticing smells, it's very mafioso. Make them an offer she can't refuse. So you stuff this Kong that's really, really fabulous, and then you give it to her. And you give it to her for a little while, then take it away. And then give it back to her, and then let her work on it a bit, and then take it away. The idea is that it'll entice her to be like, "Oh, I gotta keep working on this thing, or else Dad's gonna come over and take it away."
There you go, Jim. I like that idea. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too with your questions or comments. I hope you will. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Talking about keeping our pets warm in winter and also keeping them enriched. And George has had a great idea for our last caller. Maybe he's got one for you. Again, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org. You know, the right material and size. I just go back to the coats for a minute. You do have to be careful about getting the right size and of course the right material.
Exactly right. You know, you have dogs that you know, they really abuse their coats. You know, people that take their think of like a German short-haired pointer or a golden retriever, or, you know, a lot of these dogs might not need a very, very big coat, but when they're out and about, some dogs are very, very short-coated, like a German German short-haired pointer. And, you know, for them to wear a coat, you want to have something that's going to stand up against the elements and the abuse of them wearing the coat, running through brush and, you know, thorns and, you know, all, so the right gear for the right job. And, you know, I mean, Carhartt makes a cute coat for dogs. It's really a very canvassy material. They make like oil slicker type material, like those cowboy jackets. They make all sorts of different jackets and materials. And what you said is very true too, Larry, about the proper fit. We've all worn a jacket that's a little too big, and that cold comes right up the back. And the whole point of the jacket is to keep our pups warm and insulated from the cold. So making sure that you have a nice snug fit close to the dog's body is important.
Yeah, absolutely. Get the number 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I hope you join in. I know I'm thinking about Lila now, the dog. Who
is Lila, your dog?
No, it's my very good friend's dog. So,
okay.
And I've kept Lila many a time when she was gone on vacation and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So I love that dog. But Lila, with the temperatures we've got outside now, she doesn't like going out very much. And when she goes out, you get her out, she runs straight to her spot and goes and wants to come right back in. But some dogs don't want to go to the bathroom outside because it's too cold.
Exactly right. And, you know, I always talk about house training for the brave that are adopting puppies around this time. And, you know, the idea of having this puppy come in, house training can be very difficult. Now, you have two different types of dogs. You have dogs that absolutely love the cold weather, and you have dogs that don't like the cold weather. And sometimes, let's say we're talking about a dog that really loves the cold weather. You take the dog outside, you're freezing your toots off, and then the dog pees and poops, and then you run him back inside. The dog's like, what? I just went to the bathroom. I want to play. I want to enjoy myself outside. So going into the house is viewed by the dog as a punishment. Now, on the flip side there, you have my little dog, Suka, who you take her outside. She pees and poops as fast as she can. She's like, get me inside now. And she wants to head right back inside. So the going inside can be viewed as a reward or a punishment or some sort of, you know, depending on the dog and what their opinion of this cold weather is. Because there are some people that like this cold weather, right, Larry?
Yeah.
We all have that friend that wears shorts in this weather.
Yeah. I'm not one of those.
Me neither.
Oh, man. Well, let's take another call. Louie in Oconto will give you a chance now. Hi, Louie. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, Louie. Hi.
Oh, I just want to say a shout out to John and Nick. Hopefully they're listening to this great program also. But my question is this. Is there any kind of things to keep a dog's mind active and actually use creative thinking rather than just a rote trick or something like that where they have to figure something out? Any ideas?
Absolutely. There's a ton of toys out there on the market that are little puzzle toys where there's these little slots and links where you put little treats and stuff in there. And, you know, people often say, oh, yeah, my dog, she figured it out. And, you know, she does it really easy now. And I say, well, can she do it in the yard? Can you take it with you when you take there's a couple of nice breweries here that you can bring your dog. Can you bring your puzzle with you? And can your dog do it when there's when distractions are around? So just because your dog can figure out the puzzle in a very sterile setting of your living room doesn't mean they're able to do it in more distracting environments. So that's one side of it in terms of using the actual puzzle toys. And I believe her name is Nina Oddington. She makes a whole series of toys from, it's almost like Sudoku, very easy to very hard. And dogs really enjoy working for those treats. And it's big on enrichment, really wonderful for their brains. Now, there's always the tried and true Kong, right? Stuffing a Kong, and they have to, you know, eviscerate the Kong and eat all the goodness that's inside of it. And the real beauty of the Kong is that you're also rewarding for position and location. So if you do have a puppy and you're training it to be in a crate or a specific location, you can put that Kong on a rope, run a rope through it and tie a little knot, stuff the Kong and freeze it, tie it to the inside of the crate, and you have a dog that wants to be in their crate and enjoys laying down, eating their Kong in their crate. It also keeps their brain enriched because they're eviscerating, they're working for their food. Now, when we go into the more simple world of enrichment and puzzle games, there's a couple you can do at home, and it's really great, especially on these cold days. If you have kids, this is a great way to sort of do a craft with your kids and keep your dogs entertained as well. You get yourself an old towel, and you lay it out, and you sprinkle kibble on it, and you roll it up a little bit. You sprinkle a little more kibble, you roll it, you sprinkle kibble, you roll it until you're done. And you take that towel and you put it inside of an old cereal box. And what your dog gets to rip up the box and then sniff around the towel. And then finally they get, you know, they're going to get all the kibble out. But that's, again, tapping into the evisceration and consumption. And it keeps them really, really busy. I also like to do scavenger hunts in the house where you take their allotted meal, right, breakfast or dinner, and you sprinkle it in different parts of the house. You sprinkle a little here, a little there, a little there, and they're going to walk around the house and look for their food as opposed to them just sort of eating mindlessly out of a bowl. And all of that really tires them out mentally. And if you do have a dog that loves the snow, you can pat down some of the snow, but throw a handful of kibble in the snow. Let them go for that. You know, that idea of they make these snuffle mats, which is like really long. It looks like high, super high pile carpet, and you can put kibble in there. But the all-natural snuffle mat has always been my lawn. You know, I just throw some kibble on the lawn and my dog goes back and forth and back and forth and she gets tired.
I love it. You've mentioned Kong a couple of times, George, and you have a Build a Better Kong workshop coming up.
Yes, this Saturday. Thanks for bringing it up. This Saturday from 3 to 5, I'm co-hosting this with Bad Dog Frida on the east side of Madison, and we'll be in the lobby of the Barrymore with tables. And this Kong workshop is going to be pretty fantastic. We're going to be teaching people the benefits of stuffing Kongs or just any stuffable toy. It doesn't have to be a Kong per se. It can be a wobbler. It can be, you know, all these different toys that you can stuff. But you can bring up to 4 stuffable toys, and the store will be open for day up for purchases. And then we're going to provide the guidance and sort of knowledge as to why enrichment and eating out of Kongs is so important, and all the fixins to stuff your Kongs following our recipes that we came up with. And we're going to have over 20 recipes to take home and try, and for the dogs, of course. And then we're going to have raffle prizes. Obviously, masks will be required for all participants, and space is limited. So you can sign up by contacting Bad Dog Frida, and I can get their number.
We have a link, too, on our website, wpr.org/Larry.
Oh, wonderful. And you can call to register, too, 608-442-6868.
And, okay, 608-442-6868. Right?
Yeah, 608-442-6868.
Okay.
The benefits of stuffing Kongs is just, you know, we have these beautiful dogs where, you know, genetically we've modified them to be who they are if you have a specific breed or you have mutts. But all in all, dogs love to work for their food. And, you know, when we feed them out of a bowl, yeah, you know, that's okay, but they'd much rather work for their food, whether it's training or just enrichment.
And again, that workshop, you can go to wpr.org/Larry and you'll find that in our program notes on today's show in the program notes. So there you go. That sounds like fun. And it's this Saturday?
It's this Saturday.
Perfect. Okay. Let's go to Samantha in Arcadia next. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Hi, this is Samantha. I was just wondering, I've got a friend that has a little teacup chihuahua, and how do you keep clothes on something like that, or to keep booties on? Because this little guy, girl, it's a girl, has just so little feet. I mean,
I know.
She's just so small. She's just so cute, but it's like my friend takes her out to go to the bathroom, and it's just like she gets lost. So what do you do there? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for calling. So this little chihuahua, you know, one of the big things when the dog is that tiny, I mean, you figure 2 to 3 inches of snow is going to go up to the dog's back practically. So it can be really, really hard for them. So a couple of tips I like to make is you can grow some sod in your house. So they make these trays where you put your boots or your shoes at the end of the day, in a mudroom or wherever, and you can actually fill that with dirt and actually lay down some sod, or you can get sod in the order some sod online and have sod delivered to your home, and then have that as their bathroom in the house, so that they're still practicing going on grass. And I wouldn't object to even using wee wee pads in the house for these little guys, because it's bad outside. Now, if you absolutely have to use some sort of booty, they make these little balloon booties. They're not made of real balloons, but they have a wider opening than a balloon, and you literally stretch it out and slip it over their foot, and the elastic is tight around their ankle. And it's a specific type of toy, a specific type of booty for these dogs. They work really great because they stay snug around the ankle. And you'll forgive me because I don't remember the name. I can actually look it up really quickly and find the name for you. And then in terms of jackets too, with some of these smaller dogs, you can actually get extra large wool socks. And you cut the toe off the sock and you make a little sweater for them out of a sock for these little tiny guys, because they get absolutely so cold.
there you go. I had never heard that before. That's very interesting. Well, George Malera is our guest today. George is a certified professional dog trainer and the owner of Divine Canine in Madison. Questions for George, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. Courtney Everett, our on-air producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at some indoor training tips. We're looking at taking care of your pet during, all times of the year, but especially during the winter when they're inside more than they're outside, for sure. And we also want to get into rehoming pets as well as we talk with George. George Malera, professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. George, just a question. Someone was wondering about, as a professional dog trainer, do you go to people's homes? Do they come to you? What do you do?
So, there's what I personally do. Well, in the time of COVID, I've been seeing a lot of people virtually, which was crazy to me in the beginning when we first met Larry. You know, COVID had just begun.
Yeah.
One of your other producers, Steve Gotcher, did a little piece too, and it was. It was really odd to just have to do this virtually, and I never thought it could be done. And, you know, we adapt and we keep going forwards. I personally adopted a COVID puppy so I could have a dog to demo virtually with to my clients, so I can show them what to do. And as vaccines became more available, I started seeing people that were vaccinated outside and on their property. So it really depends on what's going on. Some people are, you know, autoimmune compromised or immune compromised, and they have to do something more virtual. And some people are able to meet in person. And we, you know, now that I'm vaccinated, I can go into people's homes wearing a mask and meet with their lovely dogs inside, which is almost normal. Almost normal. But, you know, we, like I said, we adapt and we move forward. I do love the aspect of meeting with people in person. And I also host people on my property, too, where they can come and be in a little off-leashed area. We can do training there.
Yeah, that's great. I was just thinking about my own self here. I'll be teaching. First class of the semester is tomorrow for me, and we'll be doing that masked. And it's, you want to meet in person. Masking isn't what you normally would like to have, but I tell you what, it's good to be able to meet in person. There's no doubt about
around some warm bodies. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what class do you teach, Larry?
Well, I'm teaching a class in radio and podcasting. So
very cool.
Yeah, so that's something I do most semesters, and really enjoy doing it, and always enjoy working with this UW students. They're great, great group. Well, you know what? Let's not, enough about me. Let's go to Carolyn and Holman and see what's on Carolyn's mind. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello. I sort of caught the end of one of your callers in my vehicle. I'm calling. I have about a nearly two-year-old. He's a Malinois Black Mouse Kermix. Mm-hmm. He's a very smart dog. He's figured out how to open doors, both pushing in the handle to push the door in, as well as now he's figured out how to pull the door or push the handle, lever handle, and pull the door in. He is crate trained. I work, and you know, for 8+ hours. There are days when I just don't want to have to put him in the kennel. But he's started getting into the garbage, just becoming destructive. I do exercise him every day, and he does go to daycare. For the most part, he's a well-behaved dog. But do you have any other suggestions for me on
a bit of destructive behavior indoors while you're gone?
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to – thank you for calling. And, yeah, Malinois are incredibly intelligent. They are the Ferraris of the dog breeds. You know, those in, like, the herding breeds, the Aussies and the Border Collies. And, you know, idle hands are the devil's tool. But, like, how much training can you do in a day when these dogs, all they want to do is learn? So one of the things that I'll recommend is, and I'm not sure where are you located?
Holman, Wisconsin.
Okay. Not sure how far that is from Madison, but there are some trainers that do a walk and train program where they come by the house and they'll pick up your dog and then do some training and teach them new things, whether it's tricks or some basic obedience and manners. But the idea is that they're almost getting homeschooled for, you know, an hour to a day while you're at work. This can be super beneficial for dogs because they get that break in the middle of the day where they're not, you know, you're not feeling guilty for having them in the crate all day. And they're actually getting some, you know, some nice education and some nice learning in the process. The other thing, if he does get does he get along well with dogs?
Yes, very much.
Wonderful. So dog parks can be a great place for him to go, or possibly like a doggy daycare a couple times a week, just to get some of that super drivey energy out, so that he can sort of burn that off. But nothing will take the place of training. I love working with these really intelligent breeds because I like to show people what brand new training can do to their mind. You know, I have one client that texted me and says, I had to check my dog's breathing with a mirror. I thought he was dead. You know, he was just so tired from learning so much. And you know, that warms my heart. So one of the things, too, that I want to mention is that there's a difference between practicing behaviors he knows and teaching him something new. And it's that idea of lighting up different neural pathways in the brain when he's learning something new. And that's really what we want to achieve. And then when we also should talk about technique, when you're training with a dog, there's a technique called luring. Now, luring sounds exactly like what it is. You take a cookie, you hold it above their head, they sit, you take a cookie, you lower it to the floor, and they lay down. Luring is not like the evil Darth Vader of dog training, but it does sort of handicap your dog in respects to creating a sort of stagnant dog that says, I'll do whatever you want, but you have to give me the answers. So there's a technique called shaping, and there's a website called clickertraining.com. Karen Pryor's website. She is like the grandmother of clicker training, and she's like a god in the training world. And she talks about shaping and how we really unlock our dog's potential through shaping. And once your dog understands how to be trained through clicker training, it really unlocks the world. Essentially, what clicker training is using a sound, a clicker, to let the dog know they've done a behavior correctly. So if you think of the click like a camera shutter, you're capturing that moment when your dog did the behavior, followed by some treats. So very quickly, they learn that that click means treats. So instead of having a dog that sits stagnant waiting for the answers, you have a dog that is interacting with you saying, how do I get you to click? They offer behavior, they offer behavior, they offer behavior.
So, Carolyn, there you go. That clicker training sounds like a great... And you said it's not... there's a website called...
Clickertraining.com.
Clickertraining.com. That's well worth a look. And a clicker isn't very expensive either.
Not at all.
So there you go. Thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it. You can join in to 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org. Janet sent us an email asking about the best toys and Kongs for... She's got a 9-week-old, 3-pound mini schnauzer puppy. Also, what are the best training books out there?
Oh, my goodness. So let's start with equipment. You know, with equipment, any of the smaller Kong toys. So the puppy will need a smaller Kong toy. And they make one that's just darling. It's like 3 inches tall. It's so adorable. So any of the stuffable toys are really great. She's going to want to have a lot of things where he can sink his little teeth into. I don't recommend raw hides across the board for any dogs, but nowadays they're making things that look like raw hides that are made from different parts. So one is made from collagen, one is made from rice, and there's these really, really hard to chew things. So those are great to have around. You really can't go wrong when choosing any sort of rubbery toy. And they also make Westpaw makes a toy called the Toppler, which we really, really love. Now, when it comes to dog training books, it depends on how deep down the rabbit hole you want to go. My go-tos are always Ian Dunbar, Gene Donaldson, and Patricia McConnell. That's like the holy trinity of dog trainers that I love to recommend because they have such a wonderful, wonderful way to explain things, and the basic obedience curriculum they have is just so easy to digest, and it's great. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. Patricia McConnell's been a guest on the show many a time, and we used to do a show together, a national show.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And her books really are good, for sure. Well, Al sent us an email saying when they pet their medium long hair white dog, it's a treeing walker hound. They don't use it. It's not a hunter, but it's an indoor dog. But when they pet their dog, their gloves turn white. And Al wants to know why. It's a house dog, doesn't hunt. I wondered, Courtney, our producer today, was wondering if the person meant shedding, but it doesn't feel like that.
Well, you know, that might be a reason to go to the vet, but what it could be, if I had to shoot from the hip, what it could be is that the dog has a lot of dandruff, and that's what's causing the whiteness on gloves.
Oh.
And because the dandruff is white, you can't see it on the coat, but when you use a darker glove, it's coming up onto the glove if it's not hair. Because I would assume that dog is a shedding dog and would leave quite a trail of hair. But if it could be that there's like dandruff or something else that you can't see in the coat because the dog is white.
So just to go down that rabbit hole for a minute, do you recommend a shampoo or something like that for a dog that has that sort of thing?
You know, I off the top of my head, no. I generally keep short haired dogs my whole life. And you know, when it comes to shampoos, I'd probably, you know, use something that I would use on my daughter, you know, like just something simple, something more on the organic side. Something that's not going to, you know, obviously like tear free, And I wouldn't use a whole lot of it. You know, we tend to sort of overuse shampoos, and like, and it, we want to make sure the most important thing is to rinse it out of the coat entirely so that there's not like this leftover residue. I'm not sure how often they bathe their dog, but when it comes to shampoos, you know, sticking to the more basic stuff is good.
Let's go to Susan in the UP of Michigan. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have a 8-year-old pit bull mix. She's a sweet dog. I took her to a trainer last year, and we're doing well with sit, down, stay, heel, and walk. I still fight with her. She pulls on the leash. The trainer had me use a prong collar. I do not like that negative training. So I'm trying to find some positive ways to get her to quit pulling on her leash.
I appreciate your call, and I'm so happy that you're going with your gut on the prong collar. You know, when people use prong collars, I have this idea that, you know, I always say, like, huh, I wonder if they drive a Model T Ford as well and go to the barber for a bloodletting, because it's just a dated piece of equipment. It's just so dated. And I love that in your heart you knew that it's a very aversive piece of equipment as well. So I applaud you for that. But when it comes to equipment, they have so many other nice pieces of equipment that are really great for dogs. There is the one that's most readily available that you can find at most pet stores is the Easy Walk Harness, E-A-S-Y Walk Harness. And it's a front clipping harness that gives you amazing control over a dog. And if you have a local pet store, a lot of times they'll allow you to bring the dog in so they can properly fit the harness, but the harness comes with really nice detailed instructions. Now, when we talk about polite leash walking, I always talk to people and say, you know, dogs get very excited, right? What happens when you grab your dog's leash? They light up and they're like, oh my God, we're going for a walk. Yes, I'm in, let's do this. And they get very excited. But at the same time, I can't help but think that the dog goes, oh yeah, but I got to walk with this glacier. You know, I want to run and this person walks at 1 mile an hour. This isn't fun for me. So dogs want to pull. They want to get to the next thing. They want to get to the next tree to send their pee mail. They want to, you know, they want to get going. So one thing that I recommend is rewarding two things. One is teaching. And what's your pup's name?
Do we still have you there, Susan?
Yes. Tulip.
Tulip?
Philip.
Tulip, yep.
Okay.
Sorry, Tulip or Philip?
Tulip.
Tulip, very good. So Tulip, right, you can actually put her equipment on in the house. You can even, after you're done going for a walk, you come in the house, leave her equipment on, and then start walking her around the house. And what you want to do is always reward her on the same side she's walking on. So if she's on your right, you feed with your right hand. If she's on your left, you feed with your left hand. But the idea here is just walk around the house. You can even pull your coffee table out and set up a little obstacle course that you're going to walk around. And you start giving her treats for being next to you. The idea is that we want to create this reinforcement zone right to the right of your knee or left of your left knee. And by giving her treats right there, she's going to go, whoa, I'm not going to be too far ahead, and I'm not going to be too far behind because this ATM is spitting out 20s. So she's going to be hanging out next to you while you're feeding her in the house. Now, the other part here that I'd have you add to this is name recognition. So as you're bopping along, anytime, so there's the name recognition part is just you say her name, Tulip, right? She looks up at you. Yes, good girl. Treat, treat, treat. Give her some treats. The other part of this is also the auto look, where she's bopping along next to you, and then she checks in with you. She just gives you a little look at the end of the leash, and she's saying she's checking in. She's acknowledging that you're there. And those moments are rewardable as well, right? Catch her being good. So when you combine all these things together, you're really creating a reinforcement zone for being next to you instead of delivering punishments for pulling. Because when you punish a behavior, you do get rid of it to a certain degree, but you haven't yet told the dog what to do and what is yes, right? There's only one correct way to do the behavior, and it's up to us to show them how. So by feeding them next to and where we want them to be, like I said, that ATM spitting out 20, that's where they're going to hang out.
Good advice. Susan, thank you so much for calling.
Appreciate
your call. George Malera, our guest, professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look a bit at caring for your dog during this winter season with our guest, George Malera, professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. We've been talking about booties and sweaters. We've been talking about enrichment games for your pet. Have you ever had to rehome a pet? We haven't gotten to that yet, but we will as we visit with George. Let's take a call. Sherry in Madison, will give you a chance. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I've got a little Havanese. He's 8 years old, but still full of pep and energy. But if he was a child, I'd say he has ADHD. So he doesn't track with doing games and puzzles and things like that. And I'm wondering what I can do to keep him occupied indoors in the wintertime.
Thank you so much for your call. Yeah, you know, what's your pup's name?
Ollie.
So we you know, when we have these little pups, Havanese are a really fun breed. We want to make sure that they're staying active, you know, because they can't run around. Now, the nice thing about them being little is that they can really utilize your space to really exercise and run back and forth. So if you have anybody else in the house, you know, working on recalls is a really fun one where you have two people planted on different sides of the house and you just practice calling Ollie back and forth. So he's got to really tear from side of the house to the other side. And when he gets to you, collar grab and give him some treats. The other games I really like going back to those stuffed Kongs, I mean, they're really, really wonderful, especially when you stuff them correctly. One of the things I teach people, especially for dogs that sometimes lose interest in things, is that when we stuff a Kong, you want to think of the Kong like the New York Times crossword puzzle. Mondays is easy, and it goes all the way up to Saturday where it's very, very hard, and then Sundays is easy again. Now, when we first stuff a Kong for a dog, you want to make sure that if the dog so much as looks at the Kong, everything falls out so that they're actually being reinforced for playing with the Kong. As they get better at unstuffing the Kong, so let's say they can empty a Kong in, say, 10 minutes, you can start making it more difficult. So sometimes what I recommend people do is they put a little bit of peanut butter, if your dog can tolerate peanut butter, in the Kong, and then you can refrigerate it just so that the peanut butter firms up a little bit, which will stretch the time it'll take Ollie to empty the Kong. If he passes that test, then we take the Kong after we put peanut butter in and we freeze it, really making that peanut butter rock hard so he has to work even harder at getting it. And the game itself becomes rewarding and reinforcing, so he'll dedicate more time to emptying the Kong. And it's also about making him an offer that they can't refuse. If you just put some kibble in the Kong, they might turn their nose up at it, be like, I eat that for breakfast and dinner. But if we turn up the heat and use a different new kibble or some other higher value treats or other types of mushy material, like one of my favorite go-to recipes is canned pumpkin, Greek yogurt, and peanut butter mixed together, and then I put it into a Kong. And we'll be doing all these recipes at the Kong Stuffing Workshop. But this recipe, like, the dogs go crazy for it. And you can actually put it in the Kong and freeze it, and then they have to really work hard at licking it and licking it and licking it and getting themselves really good and tired. So making sure that you stuff the Kong appropriately for a dog that might be easily distracted and or easily or that easily gives up on working on a project, you can entice them by making them an offer they can't refuse.
Sherry, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take a call from Matt in Eau Claire. Matt, hi.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Question I have is I've had labs all my life, and we currently have two. I got a 2.5-year-old female, and we started to have her bred because we wanted another one, and I have her daughter, which is a year old. The issue that we're having with the puppy or the 1-year-old is she can't seem to break her of licking. I've never had seen it like this, but just constantly licking. Even when she goes to greet you from 5 feet away, the tongue is out and it's just lick, 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 lick. Like weird. I'm just not sure what to do.
She licked the same place all the time?
No, she just wants to lick you, lick your face, lick your hands.
Oh, she wants to lick you. Okay.
Yeah, lick you.
That was my question too, Larry. I just think, does she like to lick people and things, or is it herself? I wasn't sure.
Oh, no. It's just, whoever she's walking up to, that tongue is coming out.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, sometimes a little bit of an obsessive behavior like that, when they're just totally, like, you know, obsessed with licking, it could just be part of her personality. Would you describe her as being like a very, very submissive, sweet, snuggly dog? Like, if you approach, does she slink down a little bit and like squint her eyes? And like, is she a low dog?
Yep. You pretty much describe her. She's an absolute sweetheart.
Yeah. There's no crystal ball. This is what you described is how submissive dogs act. And it's the best of both worlds in respects to, like, she's being super, super submissive. Like, I can't stare at you in the eyes. I might burst into flames, to, like, you know, to her being really sweet and wanting to lick on us. So I would stay away from any sort of, like, even gentle reprimand. Like, even if, come on, stop it. Just stop licking me, right? She's going to go, oh, my God, you're upset? Let me be more submissive. So the idea here is just to sort of ignore her if she starts to lick, or if it becomes overbearing when she's just trying to lick you, lick you to death. You can literally cross your arms and turn your back on her. And then when she settles down, engage with her again. So you are delivering a little consequence of ignoring her when she licks, and then you start petting her. If she starts licking, disengage. And making sure that the whole household is doing something gentle like this, because, again, she's already, like, at the most submissive point. Aside from, does she piddle, too, or does she not piddle?
Oh, no, does not piddle. Nope.
Okay. That would only be, like, that would be the next level of submissiveness. So if she's not piddling, that's wonderful. Make sure that, like, everybody in the household is sort of following suit. If you have any kids and they enjoy licking, I mean, you might be rewarding the behavior, but in the grand scheme of things, it's better to have a sweet, super sweet, submissive pup that is, you know, happy-go-lucky and darling than a dog that's, like, fearful or nervous. Yeah. So the licking is coming from a place of being super submissive to your family, which is nice. She loves you.
Good luck, Matt. Thank you so much. Turn your back.
Turn your back.
Carolyn in Sun Prairie, we'll go to you.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the air.
Sure.
We have a yellow lab who is your very typical yellow lab and chase something all the time. But around Christmas, he tore his ACL. I've had him to the vet once, but I'll be taking him tomorrow to see about surgery and stuff. But in the meantime, the poor guy is depressed, and I just don't know how to entertain him or keep his mind going, you know, during this time that he needs to be, you know, pretty immobile.
Yeah, I'm pulling up my colleague's information. There's this YouTube video that is wonderful. Now, the YouTube video is copy link. So this link, I'll forward it to the producer, Courtney, and then she can get it to you if you want to just wait before you hang up, so she can forward it to you. So the link here is, it takes you through the menu of the games. If you go into the description, it'll take you through to all the videos of the crate rest games. So he'll be teaching him things like hand targeting, where he touches his nose to your hand. It's all like prone position stuff where he's laying down and resting. And I'm sure it's hard to keep, I don't know how old he is that you said, but it's probably hard to keep him still. But using the crate, using X-pens to sort of keep him in a corral, or even baby gates to keep him more so in a kitchen or in a specific location, making sure, obviously, not jumping on and off things. But the idea of keeping him busy are these crate rest games. You can play a lot of different games, and this is where the Kong, I mean, what a great day for talking about Kongs. These Kongs are going to be your lifesaver. He shouldn't be eating any meals out of a bowl. It should all be out of his Kong, because it'll take him time, and all the licking and eating out of the Kong, he's going to have to lay down, and you'll be able to use the crate with – you'll feel less bad about using the crate so much because you know that he's getting that enrichment, and you'll see him mentally get tired too. So the idea of using the crate to sort of keep him mellow and chill is going to be very, very helpful as you teach him these games. And you can teach him little things like how to rest his head in your chin, how to shake with his, you know, how to shake or give five. I teach a game called Naughty Dog where the dog has the paws out in front and the dog puts its chin down on the floor between the paws. And you say, Naughty Dog, and the dog puts their chin down. Anything with the front of his body that he can work on is going to be really helpful for him.
There you go, Carolyn. Thank you very much for calling. Our guest today, George Malera, will be with us right up until 12:30 today. George, of course, professional dog trainer and owner of Divine Canine in Madison. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we will be back with George. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at pet care during the winter. So we have some training tips. We're going to talk about rehoming pets a little bit on the show as well. And George Malera is our guest, professional dog trainer, owner of Divine Canine in Madison. And we'll go right to the phones. Our lines are all filled, so let's go to Connie in Portage. Connie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry, and your guest. I have an English Bulldog puppy who's almost a year old. She will be next week. And she's absolutely precious, but we don't have her spayed yet. And I wondered if that had anything to do with her going potty all over the house after we've had her outside for a long time.
No. Potty training is separate than having a dog that's not spayed or neutered, even in the realm of marking. But what the more important thing, my heart, I'm just smiling right now. I love English Bulldogs. So I just imagine this little, what color is she? Is she cream and spotted or brindle?
No, she's reddish with four white feet, and she has black eyes like a raccoon, and then her mouth is all white. She's absolutely adorable.
I bet. Oh, man. So when we're talking about house training, I'm going to just give you a couple of my go-to tips for house training. Number one, confinement is key. And because she's a squat little dog, does she enjoy let me ask you, does she enjoy the cold weather?
No, she doesn't like the cold weather, but she will go out, after I coax her, she will go out, and lots of times she'll go out and she'll go potty, but then lots of times she will go out and she'll hang around outside if it's not cold, but she'll come back in the house and then go potty.
Right. So the rule of thumb to follow is this, is so you take her, and I'm sorry, what's her name?
Her name is Lily.
Lily. So you take Lily outside and you give her time to eliminate. Now, if let's say, and you're the good mom, so you know whether or not she has to make a poop or not. But let's say this is just pee. Are you having poop accidents in the house?
Pardon me, am I having what?
Any poop accidents.
Oh, yes. But not as many.
Okay. So number one, make sure she's on a really tight feeding schedule, which means you put down her food. She has 5 minutes to eat. If she doesn't eat, you pick it up. She'll eat at her next meal. And you're going to use treats for training and stuff in the meantime. That will get you set up for her pooping on a regular schedule. If she's eating all day, she's pooping all day, especially if she doesn't have the muscles to hold it in. Number two, when it comes to pee, so if she's outside, it could be that she's distracted or cold that she's not going potty. So number one and number two end up being number 10 on the list to do when she sees birds or squirrels or bunnies or she's just distracted. So what happens is she goes outside. When she comes back in, she cannot have freedom. She cannot have freedom. She has to go back in her crate or back into confinement for X variable amount of time. You being her mom, you know, like, I know your back teeth are floating. You have to pee, and I'm not going to let you go in the house. So you're going to make sure you put her in the crate for, say, 5-10 minutes, and then take her right back outside. This you will, this pattern you'll repeat until she pees for you. And you also want to keep an eye on how much she pees. Is it a full expression of her bladder, or is it just a little squirt? If it's just a little squirt to get a treat, you make sure she wait. You wait until she expresses her bladder. Which brings me to the next point. Mornings are going to be your most successful time because she's gone the whole night without peeing. Mornings will be the most successful time for you to reward her for going pee outside. So when she pees outside, now this is another mistake people make, is that they start to applaud their dog too soon. So imagine I'm a famous knife thrower and I have my assistant Larry Mueller on the wheel spinning. And what might I say to the audience before I start throwing these knives? Please hold your applause until the end. No flash photography. Right? So when dogs are eliminating outside, what people have a tendency to do is that the moment the dog starts to pee, they go, woohoo, good puppy, pee, 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 pee. And then the puppy stops peeing, and you're giving it treats. And then they go, that's great. I'm really glad I got this treat, but do you mind if I finish up inside? So make sure you're waiting for that full expression of her bladder. And when she does finish peeing, I mean, I want Blue Angel flyover. I want a full brass band and the yummiest treats you have right where she peed, like right after she lifts her little tushy up from peeing. That's when you're going to reward. Do not reward inside like 20, 30 seconds later, because we want to reward as the behavior happens.
There you go, Connie.
One little tiny side note that I want to mention is next time she goes into the vet, have the doctor take a look at her vulva. Now, if she's having the urgency to pee, she could have what's called an inverted vulva, that her vulva didn't come out, and that could be causing an infection, which could be a medical issue, which she would need to have rectified with antibiotics if she has a UTI. So do you ever notice her, like, with urgency to pee, like she's peeing a lot inside or outside?
She's peeing a lot inside. And I did have her to the vet, and she did have a urinary tract infection, and she's clear of that now, but she's still doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, and that's why I mentioned it. I just wanted to mention it because that can be a big indicator. So now the other part is making sure that you're cleaning your house with really appropriate objects. So maybe it's time to just do like a big thorough cleaning, rent yourself a rug doctor, and, you know, run around to all the carpet and just give it a good sound cleaning. And then start from scratch when it comes to house training, because she's been going in the house, and if there's urine that hasn't been cleaned up properly, that could be a problem.
All right. There you go. Good luck, Connie. Thank you. Bruce and Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Bruce.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hi.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi. And thank you for having the show. Just a big dog lover my entire life. I've got two dogs right now, and my younger dog, Louie, who's two, he's a Corgi Chihuahua mix, and uh-huh. He's really fun, but he gets really scared at a lot of things. And the main thing that I'm concerned about is if I'm sitting on the couch with him and another one of our family members comes up, he will fear bark, and he's got an explosive bark for a little dog, you know, or that will even happen too, like if my wife will want to hug me or something like that, he'll really bark at her. And I'm trying to figure out how to not, you know, make him afraid of people who he knows and normally is fine with.
Yeah. And you know, that's, this is a very long-winded answer, but it's important. So when we're dealing with a dog with that's showing this level of reactivity, and this is where people look at me like I have 12 heads. We pair with food. And this is assuming that it is. I like that you said fear barking. This is where we pair with food. So the idea is to let him know. And this is, like I said, people look at me like I have 12 heads. We want when your wife comes in or a family member comes into the room, you're going to feed him food. And even if he's barking, you're not feeding him because he's barking. You're feeding him because your family member exists and they're coming into the room. So, you know, for whatever reason, he's scared, or and this is also something I'd want to get a bit of more of a history on, is it sounds like you're his best friend. You're Louis's best friend, huh? Are you his favorite?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I'm his favorite, yeah. And I don't scold him. I wonder about, you know, I feel like some of the other people in the house, who are all great people, but they tend to scold him. And I think he, you know, that's my theory, is that he's a little bit more afraid of them because he knows he gets sort of negative responses from them sometimes.
Right. Aggression begets aggression. Now, the thing, too, is that, you know, the other side of this could be very well that it's not just fear barking, is that he's sort of guarding you.
Yes.
It's very little. It's very little dog behavior. So so just going based on that, what you're going to do is, one, have you feed Louis when people walk in the room, and getting the rest of your family on board and having them feed Louis when they get up or walk into the room. So just like jump shot and treats on the couch when they walk into the room. The idea is to just change Louis's perspective of the family members that are going to be approaching him, so they feel so that he feels better about them coming around. You know, imagine if I said to you, you know, punishment versus consequence. Imagine if I said to you, you know, you work in an office, right? And you know, there's somebody in the office. Let's say his name's George. And every time you see George, right, I cast a Harry Potter spell on you. Every time you see George, you already don't like George. Political views. He's, you know, he's just not a nice person. Every time you see George, you're going to get the most violent heartburn you've ever had in your life. Is that going to change how you feel about George?
No.
But now let's say I take away that Harry Potter spell and I cast another Harry Potter spell on you. Now this one, every time you see George in the office, be it at the water cooler, in a meeting, passing in the hallway, you're going to feel a warm pop in your pocket and there'll be a $100 bill. Where the hell is George? So the premise here is, and this is, we're talking about classical conditioning, right? Pavlovian conditioning, where every time your family member walks in the room, he gets a little bit of cheese, chicken, turkey, roast beef, hot dog, and he's going to go, the short one with the brown hair, bring him in. Right? He's going to start calling out to your family members, and he'll start to feel better about them approaching. And then you layer that with them throwing treats at him, too, when they walk into the room. And that's the only kind of hitting I want to hear about, is throwing the treat at him and hitting him in the head with a little piece of cheese, and he's going to go, oh man, I love it when they throw cheese at me, and he'll start to feel better over time. He's young enough where he hasn't rehearsed this behavior for too long to be really good at it, and we always want to make sure that he's not going to turn to biting as a form of defense. And I mean, feel free to reach out to me, and we can discuss a little bit further, because obviously we're on the radio, and there's only so much time.
Bruce, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Lee in Appleton. Yeah, we'll go to you, Lee. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind, Lee?
What's on my mind? We got a pit bull mix last New Year's Eve, and we walk every day 3.5-4 miles, something like that. And originally, we started walking, the dog would meet other dogs, would be fine. You know, but lately, like the last month or so, you meet a dog, should be very aggressive toward that dog. And we just don't know what triggers that.
Hmm.
Is she being more possessive of me, or she's just protecting me, or what is she up to?
So I'm gonna ask you a question, Lee. How old is your pup?
We think she's like three, a little better than 3 years old. They didn't know for sure when we got her.
Okay. She's an adult though. And you didn't see this behavior. Does she ever get to play with dogs off leash?
She plays with a neighbor's dog who's under the fence. They got a hole where they chase each other around. They play from one spot to the fence to the other. Actually, mm-hmm. He met that dog walking. She plays with, and she was aggressive to that dog.
Mm-hmm. So the reason I ask you if she gets to play off leash is because if she gets to play with dogs off leash, it tells me that her behavior is more frustration based. If she doesn't play with dogs off leash, or if she ever got into an argument with a dog off leash, it would tell me that there could be some aggressive tendencies there. Now, when we break this down, I don't know if you were listening to the previous caller where we talked about feeding food. So you're going to get yourself a big old treat pouch and you're going to fill it with super yummy treats. No milk bones, no kibble, yummy, yummy treats. Cut up some cheese, chicken, turkey, roast beef, hot dogs. And when you're on a walk, the moment she sees another dog, you start feeding her, even if she's barking. I know it feels funny and you're going to say, George, aren't I paying for the barking? No, you're paying because that other dog exists. Just like I said with the other caller, that the jerk of a person, George, that works in your office, every time you see George, you get a $100 bill. It's going to change how you feel about George. Literally change how you feel. So by feeding her treats, she's going to look at George and then look back at me. Sorry, she's going to look at George and then look back at you and go, hey, I found another one. Give me my money. So she'll start to feel better about it. You'll see her reactivity sort of get a little bit better. And again, that's, again, the short answer, making sure that you trust your equipment, make sure that you have a secure hold of the leash, especially with all the ice and stuff on the sidewalks. Leashes can get dropped after we take a little slip and a tumble. So make sure you have a good hold of your leash and make sure that, that you're carrying your yummy treats. And if you want to reach out to me and we can talk about this seminar that I hosted, which is a reactivity seminar that I have online that I'd be happy to get to you.
All right. There you go, Lee. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Good luck. Norman in Wausau will give you a chance. Hi, Norman.
Good afternoon. I'd like to ask your guest some behavioral problems we have with our 3.5-year-old German Shepherd. She's a female and a very nice dog, well house trained. She doesn't do anything bad in the house, except she has two bad habits. One is when a stranger comes, and also my wife, she wants to jump up on him. The second thing she does is whine about everything. Now, sometimes she's got to go to the bathroom, and sometimes she wants us to give her some treats or something. But it's a never-ending problem, and the whinings will stop if I scratch her back, which I think she just loves to have me do because she goes out in the snow and lays upside down and wiggles in the snow as cold as it is, like today, 20 below this morning, wind chill. She's out there rubbing her back in the snow. Any solutions?
Well, let me ask you, if I was to come into your home, and would she be jumping on me because she loves humans, or would she be jumping on me because she's protecting her home?
You know, I don't know that. I honestly don't know. It's even people who have been here, let's say, a month ago, and so she got to know them then when they were visiting for a half hour or 20 minutes or whatever. And then they come back a month later, she does the same thing. In the same way with my wife, she'll do that a lot of times. Not all the time, but a lot of times.
Yeah, there's a, you know, how many German Shepherds does it take to change a light bulb? One. First, they make sure the perimeter's secure, and then they change the light bulb. So the idea is that, you know, the stranger danger, or people coming in the house, or somebody on the perimeter, it's not totally crazy to know that German Shepherds were used for protection and guard work. So when there's a perimeter breach, they can become reactive, which is why I was asking that. Now, in the event that she just absolutely loves and adores people coming over, then I would say teaching her a little bit better manners around greeting people. I have a German Shepherd friend that I know, and, you know, Egon just jumps on me. He just wants a big hug. And he loves people. So his parents don't care that their dog jumps. So if jumping's an issue, I would make sure that you have him on a leash when people are visiting, so he can't rehearse running up to the people and jumping on them. So this way you'll have a little better control, have some treats at the ready, and then ask him to do a sit or a down. Ask him for an alternative behavior that is a favorable behavior, and you do that every time a new person comes in the house. So again, it's not about punishing what is no. It's about teaching what is yes. She doesn't know that you don't want her to jump because we want to reward and reinforce what is yes. So that when she sees people come in the house, she goes straight to sitting or doing it down versus jumping up. And by having her on leash, you're preventing her from rehearsing the naughty behavior. Because some people say when the dog is jumping on them, they say, it's okay, I don't mind. So the dog is being rewarded for jumping. So we don't want that. And that's assuming that she enjoys the company of people coming over. Now, when it comes to the whining, you said, you know, she stops when you what? When you scratch her back.
Right.
This little darling has you wrapped around her little finger. So the big thing here with the whining is that if it stops when she's being scratched, I always rule out anything medical, making sure that there's nothing dermatological going on with her fur, or if she's got you know anything going on with her skin. But if she just wants a good old butt scratch, you know, and she's whining for it, I mean, you could just ignore her or just stand up and walk away from her if she's whining. And again, just not paying attention to that whining behavior. But waiting till she's quiet. So one thing you can do is always assume that she wants her butt scratched. And when she's quiet, scratch her butt. But if she whines, stand up and walk away. You're going to act disgusted. Ugh, I can't deal with that whining. And get up and walk away. So that she starts to learn that when she whines, she doesn't get the butt scratch. It's when she's quiet, she gets the butt scratch.
That makes perfect sense. Good luck, Norman. Thank you
so much. Thank you for your colleague.
Really appreciate it. Well, I just wanted to mention again that you've got that Build a Better workshop this weekend on Saturday from 4 to 5 in Madison at the Barrymore Theater on Atwood Avenue. And people, again, you can go to ideas at WPR.org or WPR.org/Larry. Go there and you can get all of the details about that event. And you had one other one that you mentioned in passing. Is that one coming up, George?
Oh, no, that is the one. That's the Build a Better Kong workshop this Saturday at the Barrymore, like you said, from 3 to 5, and they can register at baddogfrida.com, but that link's on your site already.
Yeah, and otherwise go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry and we can get that. George, it's always a pleasure.
I hope to meet you in person one day. I want to come to the studio and do this.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, maybe I can get over to the Barrymore Theater and see you at just stop in and at least wave my hand at you and say hello.
Oh, I would love that. I would love you. Jeff, definitely pop on by if you're free during that time. We'd love to see you.
Thanks, George. George Malera, his business, he's the owner of Divine Canine in Madison, a professional dog trainer. Great to have him with us. And we hope to get him back. Tomorrow we talk about how the United Nation in northeastern Wisconsin is protecting and restoring watersheds on their reservation. Then a new book, The Milwaukee River Greenway. We'll talk about that. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.